ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकजामायं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीलतापदकमलम् श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणा रघुनाथं विकं तं सजीवं सद्वैतं सावधूतं परिचनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपदं सहगणालिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते कोपेश कोपिकाकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमस्ते सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गे राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुस्ते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वञ्चकौपातरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभैव च हरितानां पानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सो आई थॉट आई वुड स्पीक फ्रॉम द नेक्टर ऑफ इंस्ट्रक्शन टुडे So, Nectar of Instruction is a very important book for us. When Srila Prabhupada first sent it to the BBT for publication, the BBT manager was thinking, after he saw the book, he thought, we'll just print a small number of copies. But when Prabhupada heard that they were just going to print a small number of copies, he said, no. He said, this book is for mass distribution. Because the devotee had looked, you know, the end of the Nectar of Instruction, and he saw these verses about Radha-kund, you know, Bhava-bhakti. So I thought, you know, this is obviously not for mass distribution. This must just be for a few devotees. But Prabhupada said, no, this is for mass distribution. Because there's such important information in this book. Actually, the Nectar of Instruction is like a condensed form of Nectar of Devotion. The main points from the Nectar of Devotion are put there in the Nectar of Instruction. So, Rupa Goswami had received these instructions from the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was residing in Jagannath Puri, you know, he would see the sea there, Jagannath Puri, and he would think it's the Yamuna. the sand dunes he thought were Govardhan Hill. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in that mood of seeing Vrindavan. And while he was in some ecstasy on one particular occasion, he had spoke these instructions to Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami later on gave us this nectar of instruction, Upadesha Amrita. People sometimes, after reading nectar of instruction, they become inspired. Let me go to Radhakund. I will go live there on the banks of Radhakund, since the Radhakund is the most exalted place. Let me go there and I will live there. But we should understand that before you take the final instruction, you have to first of all take the earlier instructions, right? You don't start from the end. You have to start at the beginning. So the initial instructions are very significant, very important. So the very first verse is speaking about the vacha, the vigams, the urges. Vacho vigam, manasa krodha vigam, jiva vigam, udaro pasta vigam, itang viganyo vishahe tadira, sarvam apimam prithivim shashishya. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the reactions of anger, and the urge of the tongue, and the belly, and the genitals, then he is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So, this verse is actually preliminary instruction. It's, you know, we may think, oh, well, I'm not going to make disciples all over the world, so maybe that's not so important. But the idea is, anyway, to understand preliminary qualifications in practice of yoga. Of course, as devotees, we're not just simply interested in sense control. But that is what is being described in this first verse, sense control. And that this is very important for us as devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement. We have to have the qualifications of yogis. In the Bhakti Shastri course, we teach about the yoga ladder, and we show that bhakti yoga is the we know, of course, bhakti yoga is the highest yoga, but sometimes we fail to appreciate that a bhakti yogi should have the qualities of all the other yogis. A bhakti yogi is automatically a karma yogi and a jnana yogi and an astanga yogi and a jnana yogi. Yeah, all of these qualities of the other yogas should be included within bhakti. Just like we give the example. If you have 1,000 rupees, you have also 100 rupees, you have 500 rupees, you have 800 rupees. It's all included within 1,000 rupees. So in the same way, the bhakti yogi automatically has the qualities of the other yogis. For example, karma yogi detached from the results of work, right? Karma yogi means you're not attached to the results of the work, offering them for the pleasure of the Supreme. So in bhakti yoga, we should not be attached to the results of work, not for us. But we say everything for Krishna. And jnana yogi has knowledge, he understands about nature of matter and spirit and the controller of both. has knowledge of the soul. He understands something, the philosophy. Asanga yogi, sangha yogi practicing meditation on the super soul, controlling the mind and senses. So all of these qualities are within bhakti yoga. So this first verse of Upadeshamrita is describing for us the elements of sense control. First of all, the urge to speak. We know when we say the prayer every day, Sharira avidya ca jatendriyate jive phale vishaya sagare. Sometimes people, they memorize this prayer, but they don't always understand the meaning of this. Of course, if you're Bengali, then it's easy enough, you know, it's Bengali language. But sometimes, you know, we get people, you know, they know the prayer, but they didn't know what it meant. So, of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. It is very difficult to conquer over the tongue in this world. But you, dear Lord Krishna, are so kind. You have given us this nice prasada just to help us conquer the tongue. So now let us take this, like this, we say this prayer. It's important for us, before honoring prasadam, that we recite this prayer, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur understands that in accepting and honoring prasadam, the tendency is there to enjoy. We're thinking, satisfy the tongue. We're not taking the prasadam in the consciousness of serving Krishna, service to the Lord. So it's important for us to recite this prayer. Like everything we do in our Krishna conscious activities, they are meditations. We go to Mangal Aarti, it's not just a physical recreation. You know, being energetic and running around and jumping up and dancing nicely. But it's a meditation. We do everything to focus our mind on the Lord. And we focus the mind on the Lord and then use the senses for the service, for the glorification of the Lord. Of course, in the beginning, you know, we need to have some lively dancing and chanting. It helps us. But we should always remember what our purpose is, that we want to focus the mind. We have to meditate, fix the mind on the Lord. The dancing, the chanting, everything is meant to be done for the pleasure of the Lord. So, controlling the urge to speak, it's a very strong desire to want to speak. You know, it's even worse for women. You know, we're lucky we have male bodies, but women's bodies have much stronger desire to speak, you know. And we see nowadays, you know, everyone's got these handphones. They can, you know, it's a great opportunity to speak more. You know, wherever you go, you see people, even the rickshaw wala, he's got his handphone, you know, and they're calling, like they're talking. People get a lot of shelter from these things, talking to others. So controlling the urge to speak is not an easy thing to do. I remember at school, the teachers would often punish us for speaking when we're not supposed to speak, right? They trained us with their sticks. Don't talk, keep quiet. That was, you know, there they forced us not to speak. But in Krishna consciousness, we have to force ourselves not to speak unnecessarily. Sometimes people, of course, go for monavrat. They think the answer to controlling the tongue is monavrat. Go into seclusion. Don't speak. Madhavendra Puri is an interesting example that he traveled everywhere alone. He was living there in Vrindavan on his own. He never kept anybody, even a servant, with him. He was a sannyasi, but he didn't keep anybody with him, although he had many disciples. But he didn't even have a servant with him. He liked to be on his own. And Chaitanya Charitamrita describes why he liked to be on his own. Because he was worried that if somebody else is with him, there will be unnecessary talk and it will distract his mind from Krishna. Sometimes the example is given about bracelets. When you put one bracelet on the wrist, there's no sound. But when you put more than one, immediately you can hear the jingling, the sound of the bracelets. So, solitude, being alone, that is one way of avoiding unnecessary talk. But that is an artificial manner of trying to control the urge to speak. Rupa Goswami, after saying the urge to speak, then he says the mind's demands. Because even you may make a point of being alone, going on your own, but still you have to also control the mind's demands. Vichobigam manasa, the mind's demands, the reaction of the mind. Because we may, okay, we're not talking to anybody. Some people, of course, they'll talk on their own. Even they are alone, they'll be talking to themselves. You know, that can also be there. But even if we control the urge to speak, you may not say anything, but the mind is still active. In Prabhupada's time, there was a famous man. His name was, he'd become famous. I think he came from India and he went to America. His name was Mira Baba. Mira Baba. You heard that name before? And in Prabhupada's time, he was one of these, you know, gurus. So Mira Baba used to say, those who speak don't know, and those who know don't speak. So Prabhupada said, yes, so you keep quiet. Don't speak. Better you just keep quiet. You know, this is a typical Mayavada idea, you know. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we understand it's not that we want to stop speaking, but rather we want to speak only in relation to Krishna. Speaking should be done in relation to Krishna. If we use the tongue to speak topics of Krishna, that is very good. That is purifying for the atmosphere. Other talking is unnecessary. Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami describes it, or is it, I think it's Sukadeva Goswami, in the second canto about the croaking of the frogs. Yeah. The frogs are croaking. Prabhupada could impersonate the frog very nice, you know. Yeah. When it rains, you know, certain places, maybe not here, no rice fields here. But Mayapur, when it rains, then you can hear the frogs, you know. You can hear all the croaking. And they're croaking. And what is happening? The snake of death. The snake can hear the croaking, and the snake will go, pow, pow. You can eat, get a big feast of frogs. You know, go and eat all the frogs. So the frogs are croaking, and their croaking is inviting the snake to come and eat. In the same way, when we speak mundane topics, what is called gramya katha, the village talk. In the village, there's always a lot of talk. Now the women have always, in the village, they always gossip so much about everyone. So that gramya katha, that will bring old age, disease, and death, and birth again in the material world. But when we speak about Krishna, then that brings us eternal life, frees us from the bondage of birth and death. So this is the principle of Krishna consciousness, utilizing our tongue for the glorification of Krishna. There's no harm to speak topics of Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit was speaking. He had only 7 days to live. He didn't do monavrat. He was asking, inquiring. That is the business. His inquiries helped him to get free of birth and death. So this proper use of the tongue is to inquire and to talk topics in relation to Krishna. But then the mind's demands must also be controlled. The nature of the mind is desire. And these desires come in different stages, thinking, feeling, and willing, right? We think about something, you walk past the shop, and you see something, oh, that looks nice, oh, I would like to have that. And then we think more about it, we start to have some feeling for something, and then as the feeling remains, it becomes willing, I have to. Then when it comes to the willing stage, then action will take place. So the mind's demands, the mind will always have demands. That's the nature of the mind in our conditioned, imperfect state, that there will be demands. How do we conquer over the mind's demands? By knowledge. We have to cultivate spiritual knowledge. Armed with knowledge, stand and fight, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Slay this destroyer of, knowledge and self-realization? So the enemy is lust. And that lust is there within the senses, in the mind, and in the intelligence. It's especially in the senses. And when we speak of the senses, that most, the strongest sense, the tongue. Sometimes devotees show the picture of the tongue. You know, and there's so many different parts of the tongue. The senses, so strong. You know, so sensitive, the demand to enjoy, to taste, to speak is so strong. So we have to control the tongue, we have to control the mind, conquering over the mind. Maharaj Ambarish is our great acharya in devotional service, and the very first thing he did was bring his mind to the lotus feet of Krishna. When the mind is fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna, then we will think to engage the senses in Krishna's service. Especially dangerous, however, is nonsense talk. It is said, nonsense talk will bring nonsense thought. We talk nonsense, then we start to think more about that nonsense. Nonsense thought will cause nonsense actions. And when we act in the nonsensical manner, then will bring birth, old age, disease, and death. You have to remain in the material world again. So we are very conscious as devotees that we want to get out of this material world. We are taking this Krishna consciousness teaching very seriously. We are sacrificing our life, this human form of life, for the service of Krishna. And our thinking is, let me not waste any more time in this material consciousness. So it's very important for us to learn how to control these senses, then the mind, then the reactions of anger. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna said, three gates to hell. Lust, anger, and greed. Anger is the younger brother of lust. So a devotee is very careful to control anger. Anger, of course, can be used in Krishna's service. One devotee was describing how some spectator had been listening to Prabhupada's lecture. And after the lecture, he came up and he was glorifying Prabhupada. And he's saying, you're doing such good work. You're removing all the anger from the world. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not. He said, why? Why do you want to remove anger from the world? He said, Krishna encouraged Arjuna to get angry. Krishna incited the anger in Arjuna for his service. He said, anger has its proper use. It's not that anger is wrong, but it has to be used in the proper way. And the proper use is in the service of. But we should be careful that unless we are the master of the senses, we cannot use anger. Must be used by one who has that qualification. Anger also degrades a person when we use anger. There's one story in the Mahabharata about Bhima, Satyaki, and Krishna were together. And it was arranged, one of them would stay awake and the other two would take rest. And then, one would be on guard and the other two would take rest. So first of all, Satyaki was awake, and Krishna and I think it was Balaram were taking rest. Or Krishna, I kind of really like it. And Satyaki was awake, and then this big, ferocious Rakshasa came towards Satyaki and said, I'm going to kill Krishna and Balaram. So don't try to stop me. So Satyaki said, what? You want to kill Krishna and Balaram? Immediately Satyaki began to fight with this big Rakshasa. It was a ferocious fight, went on for a long time. And Satyaki was fighting and he couldn't defeat him. And finally, at a certain point, the Rakshasa backed away, and then Satyaki took rest and he asked Balaram to come and fight. And Balaram came, and then this Rakshasa came back again and told the same thing to Balaram. And there was a big fight, and Balaram couldn't defeat him. The Rakshasa was fighting, and Balaram was fighting. They fought for a long time, and then again at a certain point the Rakshasa took leave, and Balaram then took rest, and Krishna came. And then when the Rakshasa came back and said to Krishna that I'm going to kill these two, don't try to stop me. And Krishna just looked at him and laughed. And he started laughing and laughing. And the Rakshasa said, you're not going to try and stop me? And Krishna just laughed and laughed and said, you're going to kill, you think you're going to kill Balaram? And said, Yaki. He said, he just laughed and laughed. And the more Krishna laughed, the more this Rakshasa became smaller and smaller and smaller. So, who was this Rakshasa? This Rakshasa was anger personified. That when you laugh at somebody who is angry, you know, then you know their anger just diminished. You know, they just don't know what to do. Because usually it takes two people. You know, one's angry and the other guy gets angry, then okay, they can really get angry at each other, you know. But if one person is angry and the other just laughs at him, you know, what's the point, you know? You can't enjoy the fight anymore, you know. So Krishna took that little Rakshasa and put him in his pocket. And then later on, they were saying, the next day they were saying, oh, you know, last night that Rakshasa, that ferocious Rakshasa came. Did you see him? Did you do anything about him? And Krishna said, who? What was this? Oh, and he said, oh, do you mean, they took the Rakshasa out of his pocket. He said, you mean this little guy? So, you know, important point to understand how anger works, that it takes two. But if we can just laugh about things, then that anger is dissipated, greatly relieved. So we have to learn to tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, and the reactions of anger. We're very careful. Nothing to get angry about. Keep the mind peaceful. Then the urge of the tongue and the belly and the genital. We spoke about the urge to speak, and here's the tongue again. The urge of the tongue. Eating. For a young person, cannot eat too much. But an old person cannot eat too little. Prabhupada taught us. He would encourage the young man, eat more, eat more. But not always, don't continually eat more. When we first come to Krishna consciousness, we can eat. It's very good for us. Will give us strong faith. We get attached to prasadam. If you don't like prasadam, that's a very bad sign. Yeah. Sometimes people don't like prasadam. Sometimes people say, oh, I don't eat this rice, I eat brown rice. Oh, this is all fried. I don't eat so many oily things. Oh, sugar. No, I don't have this sugar. You know, people were into things like health foods, you know, white sugar, oh no white sugar, only brown sugar. And white flour, oh no, white flour terrible also, you know, it has to be, you know, bran flour or, you know, wheat flour. All these white things, not healthy. White salt also, I want the black salt, rock salt, you know. It's true, actually. These things are not good, actually. White sugar and white flour and things that means all refined chemicals, bleached and so on, you know. Not so good for health. But we should be careful not to become simply attached to health. Health is important. It's certainly important. You eat too much, take too many gulab jamuns. You know, I remember when I was a new devotee, we used to have these feasts, and you know, we'd have so many. Who could eat the most gulab jamuns? You know, and Prabhupada would sometimes ask the devotees, how many samosas can you eat, you know? Oh, Prabhupada, I can eat 30 samosas. What? 30 samosas? Wow. Okay. Prabhupada himself liked kachoris. But we have to be careful not to be the slave of the tongue. Certainly, Lord Chaitanya also enjoyed prasada. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says Lord Chaitanya was not accustomed to taking prasada in small quantities. But he would not take on his own. He would take along with his servants, Govinda, and like that, and he would always have prasadam for his servants. And sometimes, of course, when Ramachandra Puri came there, then he criticized Lord Chaitanya, then Lord Chaitanya would reduce his eating to a very small amount. So Lord Chaitanya could control. But for the pleasure of the devotees, he would eat. So we should be careful not to be vishayis, not to be enjoyers of the senses. Honoring prasadam, we must take food in the right consciousness. We know sometimes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada would do severe austerities. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur would say, no, this is not the way. Rupa Goswami never taught like this. This is not the process of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You don't have to do all these rigid austerities. Our process is devotion. Even on Ekadasi, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would not do full nirjal fasting, but he would take some fruit in the afternoon. He would fast generally, morning, noon. And in the afternoon, somewhere in the late afternoon, he would take some fruit, some water. But several devotees in his mat, they would also do full fasting. So he did not restrict them from full fasting, but he would encourage them that they should not neglect the preaching. And the famous incident is there that when an invitation came for a program, the devotees were saying, oh, we're fasting today for Ekadasi, so we cannot go to the program. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, take prasadam, then go and take prasadam and go for the program. The preaching is more important principle than austerity and fasting. More important is to be engaged in active preaching. So anukalpa prasadam is allowed. Anukalpa prasadam means that prasadam which is according to the regulation, like Ekadasi prasadam, no grains, that is allowed. On the Ekadasi. You can see in Prabhupada Leelamrita, it is described, Prabhupada had said, fasting means feasting. Generally, where there's a fasting, like on Gaur Purnima Janmashtami, this day, they would, Prabhupada would have a big feast. They would have a big feast because they would use it for preaching. Of course, feasting is not so much for us, but it's more for the guests that we want to give them, the encourage them to come. The feast is there to attract the guests, that they will be more inclined to come. Of course, we also like to offer a feast for the deities, because that is also part of our devotional service, that we must observe these festivals by offering sumptuous prasada. But we may be given sumptuous, doesn't mean that we have to take sumptuous. Yeah? We have to control, we have to be regular. System is there, they say that one third should be food, one third liquid or water, and one third air. Not that you fill the belly with food and then you don't drink and you have no space for air. You know? Not that you just fill the belly with as much food as you can. There must be some allowance there. You take some food, you take liquid also, and you must leave some space also, some air there to digest. If we don't do that, we get problems. We should eat good in the morning. You can eat full in the midday, and then you don't need to eat at night. Prabhupada used to tell us, no grains after 4 o'clock. Sometimes I would see in Mayapur, the devotees are going there in the brahmachari kitchen in the night, and they're taking rice and so many big plates in the night. So this is not very good. Maybe they didn't get in the day, I don't know. But we should be very careful what we take at night. Because if we take heavy food at night, we won't digest. And that means we won't sleep properly, and then the next morning, then you'll be tired. Because you took heavy food in the night, which was not digested, the next morning you're still tired. And you come to japa, and you're just sleeping, cannot hear properly, not able to concentrate. So very important for us. I remember one time I was doing traveling Sankirtan in India, and we went to Tirupati. And that time we had no ISKCON temple in Tirupati. We were traveling, we had come from Bangalore, had been in Bangalore, and we came with a group of brahmacharis, and we went to Tirupati to do book distribution. So we stayed in the Hathiram Swami ashram. Hathiram Swami Ashram, famous place there in Tirupati. Famous Leela there with Hathiram Swami. Yeah. So, they have an ashram there. Sadhus can stay there for a few days. And they serve prasadam also. Usually they serve twice a day. They serve some breakfast, they serve some lunch. But Ekadasi, on Ekadasi, they serve only once. And they do not serve any seconds on the Kadas. Yeah, no seconds. You take one time. That's their rule they have. Oh, it's nice. Some way they have some, you know, idea, control, the importance of regulating the senses. Ekadasi is a day when we are supposed to minimize the demands of the body. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not eat, he did not drink, and he did not sleep on Ekadasi. Because, you know, he's so absorbed, you know. He has the association of all of his devotees, and they spend the whole day and the whole night just talking about Krishna and kirtan. The time just flies for them, you know. For other people, the time drags. It's only 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm already starving, how am I? Very difficult sometimes. Anyway, we have to understand the need to regulate our senses, not to overeat, to sleep sufficiently, get enough rest. Best is to take rest earlier in the night so that you can get up earlier in the morning. Don't stay up too late unnecessarily. Some people are in the late night japa club. The late night japa club. It's 9 o'clock at night, and how many rounds have you got? Oh, I've still got 4 rounds. Well, you only got 4, I got 6. There they are chanting away. Everybody's, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, there's still a few people up, And after 10 o'clock, then even still some people wandering around, and you find them in the morning, they fell asleep somewhere, with their hand in the bead bag. And they never did finish their rounds, and they didn't get a proper sleep. So, very important to get these rounds done. The earlier you do the chanting, get your japa, a good number of rounds done early in the morning, better. Of course, it doesn't mean that later in the day you don't chant. No, kirtaniya sadahari, chanting can go on, but you shouldn't have to be up late all and so late in the night to finish the japa. It's not good. Sometimes it may happen, but don't make a habit of it. Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Prabhupada said, it is a fact. If you get rest early, you sleep much better. 1 hour at night, in the night, is worth 2 hours of sleep in the morning. That is a medical fact. That if you sleep earlier in the night, like if you sleep 9 o'clock, then 1 hour in the night is like sleeping 2 hours. If you go to bed late in the night, after midnight or something, and then you sleep, that sleep is not very good. But the sleep you get earlier in the night, that is the best sleep. You can sleep very nicely, soundly. So they say 1 hour of sleep in the night is equal to 2 hours of sleep in the morning. So we want to understand these basic facts. How to arrange our living style for a healthy life in Krishna consciousness. Sleeping early, get the lights out, make a point, finish your rounds early so that you can even read a little before you take rest. Tamal Krishna Goswami always had that habit. Tamal Krishna Goswami, I used to see every night before he'd take rest, he would have a few devotees come and he would sit and read something. Just read a page, not much, read a short while, just to hear something before taking rest. But you don't want to be trying to finish japa late in the night. And then you wake up in the morning, you didn't sleep very well, you slept very late, and then again you're rushed trying to catch up, trying to do your rounds, but you're really tired, you're falling asleep. That is not the program. So, very important, we apply ourselves to this principle. If you get this training, we get in this habit, then Krishna consciousness becomes very easy for us. But if we don't make a point of doing these things, then we'll always be struggling with the mind and the senses. So sometimes it's disappointing. Sometimes I see that the young boys who've been in Gurukula, they went to Gurukula and they lived in the Gurukula, you know, Mayapur, that Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, these boys here, they have the program, go to sleep 8 o'clock, get up 2 o'clock in the morning, you know. But I see sometimes after some of the boys who graduated from that, you know, that after they're no longer in the Gurukula, then they, you know, they don't get up very early in the morning. Somehow they lose the habit. But we want to keep the habits. What the habits which we're learning here in this in ashram here, you want to keep them with you for the rest of the life. That these are the best things, very important things, you know, things like not eating heavy grains at night, not sleeping so late at night, taking rest, remembering to drink enough water. Drinking, Chanakya Pandit says, water before the meal is like nectar. Water during the meal is like medicine. Water after a meal is like poison. So, you know, basic, these little jewels of knowledge are important for us. They will help us to control our mind and senses. When the tongue is controlled, then belly is no problem. Should not have big belly. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati used to be very critical on somebody who got too fat. That you want them to lose weight. In Buddhism also, I know, of course Buddhism is very different, but Buddhism that is under, you know, a Buddhist monk who is fat, people will laugh about it. Oh, the monk, look, he's so fat, he's supposed to be a monk. They think, how is it possible? So, you know, these things are, you know, important for us. In a country like I preach in Thailand, it's a Buddhist country, so people expect a monk will be, you know, he should not be big fat, you know, they couldn't believe he's a monk. Because monk, we're all monks, we're practicing this monastic life. Monk means control senses, control the mind and senses, the tongue. The Buddhists say don't eat, they only eat two meals a day. They don't eat after 12 o'clock. Prabhupada also has the problem for two meals a day. We eat breakfast and lunch. We don't eat in the night. When I was in New York, we had a big, in New York in the 1970s, we had a big brahmachari ashram, more than 100 brahmacharis. And we were out every day on Sankirtan. But the maha, they were cooking nice offerings for the deity. They would take the maha and keep it all till the next morning. And the next morning at breakfast, they would distribute the maha to all the devotees. They wouldn't distribute it in the afternoon or in the night, what they cooked. They'd keep it till the next morning. You know, because we were just taking two meals a day. Some milk, night, a glass of milk was there at night. Like this, this is... Then, mind is controlled. We can be more focused on Krishna. The belly gets too big, big weight in the belly, and then puts more pressure on the genital. And then more pressure on the genital, then sex desire becomes strong. So then, thoughts of Krishna are no longer there. So like this, this is the first instruction, nectar of instruction, the very beginning. We have to control these senses. Brahmachari life means sense control. Any questions? Mahatam Prabhu. Loud chanting. Loud chanting is the solution. Don't be so attached to your service that you cannot chant properly. That it interferes with your japa. No. Good japa will help you to get success in your service. Your first service is to chant good rounds. If you do that properly, then your other service will all go on nicely. Why you're so much in anxiety about your service? Your first service is to chant the holy name. If you're not doing that properly, then you won't do any other service properly. So first of all, learn to chant the holy name properly. Your mind should be controlled. In the association of devotees, you can chant. You don't have to sit. If you're going to sleep, stand up. You can walk. Prabhupada sometimes would walk backwards and forwards. Baladeva Jabusan also said, can go for japa walk. But best is to be in the temple. You go outside, there's so many distractions. But get proper rest so that you're not so tired you sit and sleep, you can't stay awake. Now the temple room is very airy, you have nice big windows, you can open, fans are there, no problem. You can do the chanting. You just have to put yourself in the proper mood to do it. Detach yourself from your mind. Stop listening to the mind. Listen to the holy name. Hear the sound of the mantra. You don't have to use your mind. You have to neglect the mind. So this is the program. Take shoes and beat your mind by chanting the holy name. The mind is the business of the mind is to disturb you and distract you. And if you're being disturbed and distracted, then you're being defeated by your mind. Your mind is your greatest enemy. So you have to get over your mind. You have to start to control your mind by neglecting it. Neglect it. Stop listening to your mind. And just chant. Carefully hear the sound of the mantra. You can please them, take prasad. Prasad, you can take little. Prasad means. Not. Oh, if I eat more, they'll be pleased. Your first business is your service to Guru and Krishna. You see? Little prasadam, alright. Some little prasadam you can take. Thank you, Hare Krishna. You are not required to sacrifice your spiritual life by filling your belly with their prasadam late at night. they will respect you more if you tell them, I have made the vow, I do not eat. Huh? Well, I've just been telling you how to do it, what you have to do. I say you take two meals a day, you eat breakfast and you eat lunch. You eat a good breakfast, you can eat a full lunch, and then you don't need to eat at night. Or you take a glass of milk and some muri. Yeah, when you eat, you take one third food, there should be one third liquid and one third air.
Many times I have tried these things, despite taking good rest, no food in the night, still I find that the chanting becomes very difficult. So I have heard read in Bhagavatam Prabhupada in the Narmini section that it is not a mechanical process. So what spiritual steps we can take for improving the chanting?
More chanting. To improve your chanting, do more chanting. Can try to wake up earlier in the morning, do more chanting. There's, as you say, it's not a mechanical process, it's certainly true. The diet and all of these things, it's not, you know, it's not just, oh, I have the diet, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, so I should have love of God. No. But these things help us. They help us a little bit. But still we have to chant. We have to chant with love, with feeling. We have to understand Krishna's in His name. We have to understand this chanting is our most important business. Right? At the time of initiation we bow to chant 16 rounds. So we have to do this chanting very seriously, very carefully. We are saying the morning hours are so important, and we're spending 2.5 hours in the morning there. What is it? From 5:30, 7:30, at least 2 hours more for japa. The best time in the day for our japa. So we should do it very carefully. Don't waste that time. But don't think, oh, I did my tour, okay, I've done my japa and I don't need to chant anymore. No, we have to chant constantly. Constant chanting is required. Even if you don't use your beats, still we should be chanting. When you're doing other service, you may be helping somewhere, doing something, you can be chanting. Wherever we go, we should be chanting. The holy name should be constantly on our lips. When we take prasadam, can also be chanting. Of course, we're hearing Krishna book. Somebody's so kind, they're reading for us when we honor prasadam. But, you know, chanting should go on continually. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasati, everybody has to chant 64 rounds a day. They have to chant one like names a day. But you know, he understood, you know, that they're doing a lot of service. So he said, okay, you're not using the beats, but still you can be chanting. Somebody is cooking, somebody is cleaning, you're washing. We should always be chanting. Are you chanting when you take a shower? Are you chanting when you go to the bathroom? Are you chanting all the time? We have to keep the name on our lips. And if the holy name is not, at least other, so many other shlokas should be there. We can be reciting verses. This is the business of devotees, brahmacharis especially. We should be reciting different prayers. One temple, one place I visit in the Middle East, Bahrain. Now that temple was closed because there was some trouble there just last week or something. Some tension is there in the Gulf. So in the island of Bahrain, we have one temple there, and the devotees have a very wonderful program. Every day, they will recite some different prayers or stotras from Srimad Bhagavatam. Kunti prayers, Gajendra Moksha prayers, who else is it? Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj. So many different prayers. And they pick them out, all the verses, and every morning they'll recite one group of the prayers, you know. Very nice. You know, we also, devotees, we should be learned in these things. Maybe we didn't have the chance to go to Gurukula, like these boys in the Mayapur, you know, they are all chanting the homas and all the prayers. But we should also learn to recite Vedic mantras. Bhagavad Gita especially, could chant a chapter every day. Very good for us. I remember Gopi Paranadana, when he joined in New York, you know, he was cleaning the kitchen, cleaning the stoves. He'd be reciting Bhagavad Gita verses. Yeah, because he had that background in languages. He had studied some Sanskrit, so quickly he was memorizing Bhagavad Gita, he'd be cleaning the stove in the kitchen. You know, we didn't hire people to work in our kitchen, in our temples. We did everything ourselves. You've got all workers here doing things for you. Yeah. You've got the people there in the kitchen, they're not. But we have so much more time, and we don't use the time. When we didn't have the time, we were doing it. Now we've got so much time, and we're not doing it. We must make use of our time, every moment. Don't waste the time. Use the time to chant and to remember Krishna. Reciting slokas, very important for all of us. We chant Shikshastikam prayers very nicely. But that's only one thing. There's so many other prayers we can be chanting. Yeah, we should be chanting prayers, mantras every day, memorizing. This is the business. Brahmacharis, that we have that time, study, Vedic study. Okay, Hare Krishna.
You were speaking about the reaction regarding anger. One should control the reaction of anger. And you mentioned that unless one is a master of the senses, one will not be able to use that anger in service. So you are doing practical services, say when you are getting service done to some employees and different people, at times we use anger to them.
Yes, if you feel that the employee is taking advantage, not doing proper service, then you have a right to get angry. But Prabhupada used to get angry at us. But Prabhupada was not controlled by the anger. Could be angry 1 minute, next minute, okay. Do something. You know, so you show some anger, but you don't let that anger degrade you. Degrade you in the sense that you become emotional, or you lose control over your mind and senses. Yes, you can express your anger, your dissatisfaction to people, especially their workers, employees, they're not done proper service. So you can voice your disapproval. That's right. If you don't, they'll take more advantage. So, this is using anger in Krishna's service.
If we are affected, then we should not
do. Yes, we shouldn't be affected by it. Yes. Yeah, if you become degraded by it, you become emotional about it, slamming doors, breaking things, affects your dealings with other people. So the anger has to be focused to a particular purpose. And then you have to give up the anger. After expressing your anger, then you have to give it up. not that you hold it on, and wherever you go, you have that same anger. And everybody you meet, you're in this angry mood. You know, sometimes people are angry, they're angry for 3 days, you know. They never can get over it. So it shouldn't be like that. Well, we have to see it in relation to Krishna, that Krishna must be trying to teach me something. Krishna must have some plan that actually I don't really feel I deserve this criticism, but somehow Krishna has put me in this situation, so I have to accept it. I have to try harder. Krishna must have some plan for me. Yeah, we have to see it in relation to Krishna. The devotee is tolerant, like the tree. And so if somebody is angry, you know, okay, what can we do? We tolerate. Offer our respects. No other way. But if you get angry back, that's not the answer. And you start arguing. You know, Prabhupada would get angry with someone and find fault with them. If the person would argue back, Prabhupada would get more angry. So, you know, like I said, what did Krishna do? Krishna laughed, you know, when the anger came. Krishna just laughed. So like that, you know, you can also laugh inside. Instead of being angry in your heart you can laugh. But you can also think Krishna must be teaching me something, must have something in mind for me, some instruction he wants to give me for my improvement, for my benefit. I like that. Yeah, we should feel grateful. Thank you, Prabhu. I appreciate so much your anger to me. Please help me to improve myself more. Not that you get angry back. What right have you got to tell me? Why are you? No, you know, you should accept the anger in a humble mood. Please help me. I'm trying to improve. I'm a fallen soul. I want to become better. Thank you for your criticism. Okay? So I'm sure you're all tolerant souls. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu? Yes, everyone according to their own nature. It will be different for different people. We have to see what we can apply, how much of it is relevant for our own self. in our particular situation may not be so possible for everybody, but this is these are general facts, you know. As much as we can, we try to apply. Yeah, the influence of some people by nature are more rajasic, but that rajas, that passion nature, that is our conditioning. By nature, we're all pure souls. We're all meant to be transcendental. So we're identifying with the body. So we have to try to detach ourselves from this body. So by proper hearing and chanting, simply engaging in devotional service, we have to be patient. You know, we don't change our nature so quickly. And anyway, even you're not 100% passion. There's some goodness there, you know. There's some ignorance there, you know. There's some passion, okay, maybe a predominance of passion. But this is place of passion. This is Calcutta. We're in a big city. We're all influenced by passion. How could you be in Calcutta and not be influenced by passion? You just have to walk outside the door. The passion is there. You know, we're safe in the temple, but as soon as you walk out the door, Rajagun, very strong. So, yeah, material world, we live in a city, certainly passion is there. But by staying in Krishna consciousness, the mode of goodness will become more and more prominent. We eat Krishna conscious food, we live in a very sattvic atmosphere, you know, everybody's wearing clothes which are very much in the mode of goodness, you know, we're not wearing tight-fitting jeans and everything. Yeah, so it, you know, this is very sattvic atmosphere here in our temple. You know, everything is cleaned every day. We all bathe regularly, you know, we're doing everything very much in the mode of goodness. So some little bits of passion are there, but they will be less and less the more we stay in Krishna consciousness. So don't worry about it. It's a gradual process. Certainly we all came from much worse than, we were in the darkest modes of ignorance when we became devotees. And we're coming up to passion, and we hope we can go on and come up to goodness. Yeah. Prabhu, you had a question? Yeah.
He's saying some people say different thing. People say that we should not drink 1 hour before meal or 1 hour after meal.
Yeah, that's right. That's the same thing. The water should be taken. You drink the water before the meal, means like an hour before, then it's medicinal. And you drink the water after a meal, you have to wait for some time before you drink. Otherwise, it's like poison. If you right after a meal, then you drink cold water, it's very bad for your digestion. But you should take a good amount of water before the meal. Means before the meal means a half an hour or an hour before the meal. Okay. Anyway, this was Chanakya Pandit. He's just giving. Prabhupada also quoted this, told us about this. Prabhupada gave us this kind of knowledge, you know, to help us that we could have better health. So we could take care of our health and have our bodies fit to do service for Krishna.
So, Guruji, you were telling just now that the city is passion.
Yeah.
As we go out, we get affected by it. Like there's some effects and people are getting all passionate. So when we come back, what steps we can do to nullify that passion?
Well, go to the temple and chant Hare Krishna and see the deities. Immediately nullify. Immediately you come in the temple room and see the deities, offer your obeisances, chant the holy name, immediately you free the mode of passion. Very quick and simple. Okay, Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.